All right. Hey, everyone. Before we jump into this next episode, I just want to talk to Leah directly, who is actually the guest of the show. Leah, you didn't know this, but our friends and I have a very, very special message for you at the end of this recording. So stick around after the outro music to hear some wonderful messages from our incredible friends here in Hampton Roads.
Welcome to the Filipino American Woman Project, also known as TIFA Project for short, a podcast show that features stories and life lessons told by American women of Filipino descent. We're your co-hosts, Jen Amos.
And I'm Nani Dominguez.
And thank you for joining us.
If today's conversation resonates with you, text us and let us know at 415-484-8329.
And if you want to show us some love, buy us boba at buymeacoffee.com/Jen and Nani.
It says coffee, but we love boba. Again, that's www.buymeacoffee.com/Jen and Nani.
Awesome. With that said, thank you all for your love and support.
Now let's get into the show.
Welcome back to another episode of the Filipino American Woman Project, also known as TIFA Project for short. I am your co-host, Jen Amos. And of course, as always, I have Nani with me, Nani Dominguez. Nani, welcome back.
What's up, everybody? Hello.
Yes. And I am especially excited. Nani, I know you're always excited, but I'm especially excited. I mean, I'm just assuming you're excited, but I am especially excited.
Yes, I'm always excited.
Okay. Just for the record. I'm actually really excited because, I mean, first and foremost, Nani, I feel like with every episode that we do, it seems to be more deep and heartfelt and just meaningful. And I guess it just makes me feel more courageous to speak up more, you know, to continue to share our stories and continue to encourage our listeners and our guests to, you know, really amplify their stories. And today is going to be no different. So I don't know, what are your initial thoughts about that, Nani?
Yeah, I think I was just having this conversation with somebody from work, actually, and they were asking me kind of what's my inspiration to keep doing this. And since it's kind of like, you know, a full-time job, essentially, that we don't necessarily get paid for in terms of like a salary or whatever. And so someone was like, what keeps you motivated to like keep doing that and, you know, stay so on top of it? And I was just like, well, at first it was really healing and like therapeutic personally for me at the time I was at in my life when I first started with this project. But now it's become like the sense of responsibility, as you've described it before, to really carry that healing into like the collective community that we've built here. And I think that that is my answer. Yes.
That's a beautiful answer. It's always fun when I ask you, because I feel like you just compliment so eloquently everything that
yes,
I say.
I could ramble, but I'll stop there.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, exactly. Everything that you said times like 100, it's awesome. So, you know, without further ado, let me go ahead and bring on my incredible friend, Leah Villanueva Verrey, who is a movement educator, cultural connector, and perpetual alignment seeker. So the thing is, you can reach out to her on LinkedIn with her full name. However, while she has her Instagram account available and currently up to date, find her on Instagram right now as you listen to this episode, RiseAndShine757. So without further ado, welcome to the show.
Hey, y'all. Thank you for having me.
Yes. And again, I'm just really excited because, I mean, actually, let me start with you. So Leah, let's start with you sharing. How did you hear about the show and what compelled you to be on our show?
Yeah. So I don't remember when this was, maybe a little less than a year ago. I was just really feeling this strong pull to look and seek the Filipino American community, particularly in like the yoga wellness arena. And so, of course, Instagram, right? I go on Instagram and I see all these like Filipino and Filipino American centric accounts. And then I was like, oh, well, let me use a hashtag, right? Let me just literally search Filipino American something. And it was through a hashtag that I found this project, this show, and then which led me to Jen, because the power of the internet, right? So when I looked on Instagram and I saw Jen's profile and her little location, like the red dot said Virginia Beach, I was like, what? Because, you know, most of these accounts are California based or just not here, basically. So, yeah.
Oh, I love it. And I'm just going to pat myself on the back for the marketing effort of including those hashtags. Yeah. So marketing, all those things really do make a difference, everyone. Marketing is not just to make money, but it's to be seen, right? And so I'm just so glad that you were on the journey that you were at the time. And that is what prompted you to do your search and to find us. And I remember when you first reached out, and it was almost a year ago. It was probably less than a year ago, actually, but almost a year ago. And the moment you told me that you were a listener of the show and you wanted to meet, at that time, I don't think I was necessarily ready to meet new people, but because I knew that you were a listener of the show, I was like, yes, I was all like, I want to meet with you. And it turns out that both you and I have dogs with separation anxiety. So that's fun. Can't get away from our dog. But I think with the pandemic, it hasn't been too bad, I think. But no, it was really cool. And one of the things I appreciate about you the most, Leah, is that you didn't just want to be my friend. You wanted to connect me with other incredible Panais who are also business owners and entrepreneurs, or just, you know, overall go-getters in our community. And, you know, at the time, you know, living out here, I think for about a year now before I had met you, probably a year and a half, you know, most of my friends were pretty much the white community because, you know, I live in a pretty white town over here. And a lot of the work I do is predominantly white. I always knew that Virginia Beach was like highly dense with Filipinos, but I'm so glad that, you know, kind of my gateway into the Filipino community started with you. So I just thought you should know that.
You know, I feel like that happens, right? It happens naturally. Like I was really seeking community and then we linked up and like you said, our dogs who are lovely, but very, you know, horribly ridden with separation anxiety. We dropped them both and we walked on the beach. More so I was dragging my dog because has a beagle. They know beagles will just like sniff, sniff, sniff to their heart's content and gotta like lead them along. But anyway, yeah, girl. I mean, the community's here, right? And it's just sort of like, how do you just meet someone? And yeah. For us, it was Instagram. So
yeah. And a podcast. Yeah. I love it. Nani, just thought I'd get your thoughts.
Yeah, no, I'm just always so blown away of how we've been using. I know that Jen, you and I on this podcast talk a lot of shit about Instagram. Not necessarily about Instagram, but just how like overwhelmed we've been with it, you know, as of lately. But it really is such a powerful tool for connection. It's not only been the way that we've recruited guests to be on the show or guests have found us and wanted to be on the show, but we've both made a lot of like personal connections with people that we've actually, you know, met up with in person and built friendships with, you know, in real life off of just the strength of Instagram and finding each other through a hashtag, which is pretty crazy to me when you look back at it and you're like, wow, I really, really value this person in my life. And like, how else would I have met them? You know?
Yeah. It's kind of like when you ask a couple, like, how did they meet? And they're like, oh, online, you know? And back then that would seem so taboo, right? It would seem so weird and like you're desperate or whatever. But I mean, long and behold, like it's the norm now, you know?
Instagram is like match.com for community.
That's a good way to put it. I love it. I love it. So Leah, as you know, the show is called the Filipino American Woman Project. And, you know, with every new interview we do, I tend to find that the Filipino, just the label, the Filipino American woman resonates with people in so many different ways. And so tell us a little bit about your family background and why you resonate with the label Filipino American woman.
So I have an older sister and we're very close. And even though, you know, we were raised pretty Filipino in a lot of ways, for sure, like traditional Filipino style. My parents never made me call her ate. Mm. So I actually just thought of that right now as you asked that question. It's like, talk about your family dynamic. It's like, yeah, we were raised very, in a lot of ways, traditionally Filipino, but I was never asked to call my older sister ate. So very close to my sister, I had my father and my mother and was born in Toronto, Canada. I still very much so identify as being like Filipino Canadian American, even though I technically have lived in the US a lot longer than I live in Canada. But anyway, yeah, I grew up there, my formative childhood years. And then my parents, you know, being Filipino, one day we're just like, we're tired of the cold. Really, truly. They were like, we're sick of the cold, tired of shoveling snow, tired of driving in like ice and all that, you know, bad weather. And my parents moved us to Florida. So from one extreme all the way to the next.
Yeah, really.
Right. And then, but I get it. Now that I'm an adult, like I couldn't imagine having two younger children, having to hustle like in Toronto. Like that's just, it's tiring, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, my family background in Canada and majority of my mom's side still lives there. you know, every weekend we're at my tita's house. So I grew up with my cousins. I grew up with my grandma. My grandma was definitely like a major caregiver and caretaker and big role in my life. Still to this day, I only had one grandparent. And so she was, you know, she was definitely so present. And yeah. And then when we moved to Florida, it's like, we didn't have anyone. The only reason we moved to Florida was it was between Florida and LA. And my dad told my mom, you choose, up to you. And my mom chose Florida because she hated the traffic in LA, despite us having family there already. So it would have been almost kind of like an easier transition. We moved to Florida. And I feel like, as is really common, kind of like with you and me, Jen, we, you know, you find another Filipino you resonate with and you start to build, you start to create a community, right? And that was it for my mom. Through the hospital she worked at, she found two other Filipino Canadian families, same things. So that was sort of our little mini Filipino Canadian American community in Florida. And we'd spend, you know, Christmas and the holidays and birthdays together. But outside of that, I never really had interaction with Filipinos outside my own family. Yeah. Because I remember this when I was in high school, I think I was one of 4.5 Asians in my grade.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. And you know, Jen, you mentioned how the area you live in is predominantly a white community. I recognize going from Toronto, and I was born in Toronto, grew up in Mississauga, just like 15 minutes outside of downtown. You know, I grew up with everything, right? So I never felt othered. And then moving to Florida, and I didn't have the languaging to express that othering feeling. But growing up, I realized like, wow, I never had to anticipate, you know, being teased because of me being Filipino. I never had to anticipate people like asking me really out there questions.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, do you eat dog? Or like, do you speak English? You know, things like that. And it's like, yeah, I'm talking to you in English.
Yeah. So, it's like, hello.
It's like baffling. But anyway, can we curse? Like, can we just
speak? Yeah, it's explicit.
So, speak candidly, yeah, please.
Yeah. Okay. So I bring this up because I say this, and I think in the past I used to get really angry about it still, but I distinctly remember one time in like fourth grade, right? So you're a bunch of 8, 9-year-olds. We had free recess time because it was raining. So we couldn't be on the playground. So we just had to be in the classroom. And I was walking around just kind of seeing what all the kids were doing. Like, oh, where do I want to play? What do I want to do? I'll call him out because he's an adult now. I still remember this Jonathan Pollock, his slick blonde hair and blue eyes. He looked up at me square in the face, square in my eyes, and was like, we don't want Chinese people here. And that was in Jesus. The classroom. Wow. Right.
And how and old are you guys?
Like 8, 9 at the
wow.
most. And that was the first time anything's ever been that explicit. And I remember in that moment, I looked at him because he was sitting, they were like playing a board game. So I was standing and I looked at him and I'm like, fuck you. I'm not Chinese. I'm Filipino. And then I walked away.
Right? That's right. I love it. I love it. Like, I would have just internalized that, but I just love how corrected him. Oh, I love it.
And thank you. And you know, what's funny is we went to the same church because, you know, most Filipinos are Catholic. And so like that Sunday, I see him and his family at the Catholic church. And he honestly, like, now that I'm older and revisiting this memory, it's like, I felt like he didn't look at me. And I'm like, I wonder why now, because I don't know, like maybe he realized what he said was really whack, or maybe he was scared of me because I actually said, fuck you, as like an 8-year-old, you know? I'm also thinking like, how did I learn that language? And I realized it's like, you know, my dad would always have on like Eddie Murphy in the house, or, you know what I mean? Like all these like comedies. And so like, yeah, it's kind of good to have that language in my pocket available, ready to use.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Also, I think that, you know, because you had a strong foundation in regards to your family and being near the city, that I think it sounds like it was already internalized in you that you just owned who you were. Like there was no question, there was no doubt about it. And so when he treated you like that, maybe in his mind at the time, he thought he could just get away with it. But I'm sure it shook him when you barked back, when you corrected him, you know, because, you know, I imagine that, you know, if we think about the typical stereotypes of being an Asian woman, we just take it, you know, and I'm sure you freaked him out. And I hope he hasn't called anyone that ever since. I hope he hasn't made that, you know, like wrong stereotype first and foremost, you know, but I think you taught him a lesson.
I think that's a great example, like a personal example of something that speaks to the larger conversation about anti-Asian racism in America today and like what's going on with everything, especially here where I am in the Bay Area, because it's like, you know, as an 8-year-old little boy, did he even really know where that was coming from? It's like, he probably, imagine the conversations that were happening in his own home that caused him to say that. He probably doesn't even know why he said that. He was just picking it up from someone that he heard, you know, he was repeating what he's heard or what his parents were telling him or whoever. And so I think that just, again, speaks really amounts, like measurable, to the conversation about Asian American racism today. And also, I love that you had that reaction. I've been watching the show on Netflix, or not watching it, but I just started the first episode, and the mom was telling her son about being bullied at school, going to a new school. She was like, you catch more bees with honey, but if you're met with, or if you get another bee, you sting first, you know? And so I like that you kind of like clapped back at him like that. And even if he didn't know where it was coming from, you let him know, like, this is not okay. You don't say that to people, you know?
Well, thank you all. Yeah. It's funny. Like, I have that memory and I think about it, and like having this conversation with you all, I'm realizing more and more like the deeper layers of it.
Right? Yeah.
But at the time, it's like, I just remember being, feeling very taken aback and also like, no, you know, first of all, like, no.
Exactly. Yeah.
But then I remember afterwards, not necessarily panicking, but it was almost like the come down and me feeling like, well, do I tell my teacher, or like, what do I do? And I remember not telling my teacher because I felt that I was like, that would make me a tattletale, or that felt like I was, what was it called? Like, I just felt ashamed too. It's like,
yeah. And that's kind of the same reason I feel like why a lot of these Asian people that are attacked or slurs against them, they don't go to the police, or they refuse to talk to someone about it. A lot of it is not even reported for like that exact same reason. And it's like, what is that inside of us that makes us fearful to defend our own agency, you know? Or we feel like people can just disrespect us or tell us how we're supposed to be, or tell us we're not welcome here or there, or we're the cause of a virus, et cetera, et cetera. And just be like, oh, okay, you know?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because even, you know, Leah and I, we've been having a group conversation with our friends about this local Korean restaurant that has experienced racism. So we talked about that a little bit, and how their neighbor, Nani, so this is new information for you, like their neighbor restaurant was telling them to go back to China, you know? And I mean, they're literally neighbors, brick and mortar businesses, you know, harassing this restaurant. And the reason why they started to do curbside delivery is because, you know, even the wife herself, who's Korean, she was harassed when the restaurant was open. And so it's just, it's a lot. And I wonder if maybe the reason why people can scapegoat us and can talk to us that way is because maybe we've gotten so good at assimilating here. I think it goes back to the whole model minority myth of like, oh, you know, we're paying our taxes, we have our jobs, we're staying within the lines, you know, that people don't think that we have an opinion, you know, that we can stand up for ourselves. Like, I mean, I'm sure there's more layers to it, but it's fascinating to start bringing to light how, you know, other people can scapegoat us or think they can scapegoat us like that.
Yeah, I also think it's really interesting for you to bring this perspective on our show, because I was doing a writing workshop a couple of weeks ago with Justine from Living Hyphen, and it's a Filipina Canadian.
Yes, I took a workshop with her months ago. She's awesome.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. No, cool. I loved it so much. I was like, oh my God, I want to do one of these every week. But there was like, you know, a split between Filipino Americans in the room and Filipino Canadians. And she was just pointing out how our experiences are typically really different. We haven't had another Filipina Canadian on this show, so I don't really know what that difference is in experience, but it sounds like just from your experience coming from Toronto over to Florida, that's it, you know, people asking you those out there questions or just experiencing that overt racism.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's why I think when I still say I identify more being Canadian than American, because my formative childhood years were there, my extended family, like my titas, my titos, my cousins, who, you know, we literally talk every day still. Like, they're all still in Toronto. So yeah, like you were saying with Justine in her writing workshops, having the Filipino Canadians and Filipino Americans, at least for me growing up in Florida versus growing up in Toronto, in Canada, it's like in your classroom, everyone is a different background and everyone still retains that original culture. Like my first friend, literally my first friend of life I made outside of my family when we were three in junior kindergarten. So that's like the Canadian term for preschool. We're still friends to this day. Her name's Evelyn and she's Polish. She's Polish Canadian, but she's Polish. Like when I would go to her house, she was speaking Polish to her parents. Her grandparents lived next door. We were eating like Polish food. You know what I mean? It was still very a strong connection to their motherland.
Yeah.
And so I feel that there's so many people in Canada who are still like that, that they don't find a different culture to be weird or inferior or like, you know, all that, all those.
They don't center themselves above someone else's. It's just like, oh, this is your culture. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Wow. I feel like this is a lot already. I feel like I need to process everything that
we talked about. Volumes about this country, which again, I'm not surprised, but it's just, it's interesting to learn about, you know, how other hyphenated identities survive and live and thrive in other places, because in America, it's just kind of a shit show.
Yeah. We're kind of a hot mess right now, but hey, this is why we have the platform we have to bring it to light and, you know, put it out there. So, I mean, that's definitely, I definitely have some thoughts I want to share for episode 100 later, but I'll reserve that. This is not episode 100 yet. So I'm going to save that. But Leah, thank you just so much for sharing that. And part of like the initial conversations we had and getting to know you, there was two things that I kind of recall in our conversations. The first one was your first experience here in Virginia Beach and how you experienced racism again.
Yeah, but it was like friendly racism. You know what I mean? That's the thing.
Passive aggressive racism. Yeah.
So it was truly like, I can't get mad at you because you're just that ignorant. So Nani, could I tell you what happened? Oh my goodness.
Please.
So in a former life, I was a traditional classroom teacher, right? I still teach, but I just have a different title, but my function is still the same. I still teach young kids. And anyway, at the grocery store, because this is how this area of Virginia is, right? I feel like people are very warm. People are very friendly. So
yeah, that Southern hospitality, as everyone calls it. Yeah,
exactly. And so at the grocery store parking lot, I see this woman and on the side of her car is a huge magnet that's like private teacher, da, da, da. And I was like, oh, that's what I do. Like, tell me more. Like, what's up? You know, sort of deal. We literally hit it off that much in the parking lot. She's like, hey, my husband is playing acoustic set at a brewery right down the street. Do you want to go? And my husband and I were like, yeah, we were actually wanting to check out that brewery. She seems nice. We like live music. Why not? Right. So we go and we hit it off. I'm like, oh yeah, she's cool. Great music. Loving it. Wonderful. So fast forward, I think we hung out two more times. And then the third time she's like, oh, it's my husband's birthday. Come to the house. We're having a party at the house. And I was like, oh, that's different. Like, you know, it's different when you meet with someone at the restaurant or a bar.
And they invite you into their home. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
And so we're like, okay, yeah, sure. And like Jen said, this was like, we've just moved to Virginia. And I don't know if we were necessarily seeking friends, but my husband and I are both very open. We kind of like go with the flow on things. Like, okay, yeah, sure. We go into the house and I bring guacamole dip, right? Because I didn't want to come empty handed. But I'm walking into the kitchen and then a man says to me, what's that you got there? Kimchi or something like that. And I was like, well, first of all, hi. Secondly, why would I just bring kimchi? You know what I mean?
Like another man at the party that you didn't know that you I've never met.
And here's the kicker. He looks Asian. Like he looks Asian, right? And so I looked at my husband like, oh my God, is this going to be how it is? So me just trying to be a polite guest to like my friend who invited us. I'm like, okay, you're one person at this party. I don't know you, whatever. And I think he could tell he was sort of like, oh, I didn't think that was funny. And so he goes, oh, you know, actually I'm from Guam. I'm Chamorro. And I'm thinking like, okay, dude, if you're like, you should know, like, why are you talking to me like this? You should know
that's not the sense of humor that you greet people with. Yeah.
So that man, and it was his wife who is not Asian at all, just married to an Asian man. So at the end of the night, there's three couples, you know, well, four technically, my friend and her husband, the birthday celebrant, my husband and myself, and then the kimchi guy and his wife, and then another couple who was just really drunk. So they don't count, just to add to the atmosphere. But anyway, so we're all crammed on the couch. I don't know why we felt like we had to all sit super close on the couch. We could have just stood, whatever. So we're close physically.
When you're drinking, anything can happen. So
true. So, oh my gosh, I'm just so thankful my husband was next to me and was like the buffer between me and the kimchi guy's wife. So out of nowhere,
that's his new name.
This woman, kimchi guy, right?
Yeah.
This woman who I've never met in my life prior to this night. I don't even remember how this topic comes up, but she's like, I love Filipino babies. Oh, y'all are Filipino. I love Filipino babies so much. And I'm like, okay, cool. I think you're just trying to like be friendly, but a little creepy, but okay. And she goes on to say, oh my God, I love Oriental hair. Oriental hair is so nice. Can I touch it? Like, I don't even think she asked if she can touch it. And then she
Oriental?
Yes.
I'm sorry, do we use that word?
Over here, they do sometimes, a lot of times. But anyway, okay. She reaches for my husband's hair. And like I said, my husband's very like, if I'm the fiery one, he's like the water, like he neutralizes, right?
Yeah.
He was sort of like, okay, lady, like, yeah, thanks, like done. And then I think she was reaching like for my hair. And I was just like, I'd rather not. Like, no, thank you. And I literally, as this was happening, my friend's husband, who's a very talented singer guitarist, is literally playing like that old Dodge truck or Ford truck song, like a rock, like in the background. So it feels very like Americana to the max.
Yeah.
My friend is drunk and with the other drunk couple. So I'm like, and I'm thinking like, I'm not gonna
be the one
down.
To stir shit. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think we were just like, oh, you know, we're going to go see ya. And that's the thing. Like I have no problem, clearly, as my 8-year-old self shows, like sending someone straight if need be.
Yeah.
But in that environment, I had to do the checklist of like, one, is it worth it? Two,
yeah.
Like, is this the space? Three, you know, like, what's the intent? And normally I'm like, it doesn't matter if your intentions were good or pure. Like, this is clearly uncomfortable and inappropriate. But in that event, it doesn't make sense for me to give
to bring it up.
And before we left, she's like, we all should exchange numbers. We really should. And I'm thinking, we really will not. Like, no.
So here's my fake number.
Right. So anyway, wow. I told Jen this and it was like, that was an imprinting experience for me.
Yeah.
Moving to Virginia. I was like, where are we?
And the sad reality is that we've all been in situations like that before where it's like, did she really just do that? Or did he really just say that? And it's like, it's so out there and it's so brazen that you're just like, do I respond the way I feel inside right now? Or am I overreacting? Like you almost question yourself.
Yeah.
And then you're just like, okay, this is not, you run down the checklist. Like you said, is this even worth starting shit right now? Like, am I going to start a fight over this or do I just let it go? And I think that's where we're at again in the larger conversation today about how do you address those like kind of passive aggressive, even though that was not passive aggressive. That was like pretty fucking bold.
Bizarre.
But it's like, how do you respond to that while having, you know, respecting yourself, but also not trying to stir the pot? And is it worth the problem?
Is it worth stirring the pot? Yeah. You
know, is it worth stirring the pot or is it detrimental to my own self to not stir the pot? You know what I mean? Like, what is the right answer? And I think that's where I get stuck these days is like, how do you assess that in that moment, especially when your personal feelings are like offended?
I think because, like I said, I knew they were just kooky, you know, like I love people with quirks and character, but I just feel like, man, she was just really trying to get close and be enthusiastic, but it was just so awkward that I was like, not worth it. It just makes for a bizarre story to tell people about our first like few months of living here, you know?
Yeah. I'm just taking in everything you're sharing, Leah, and just like what Nani was talking about, like with the current, you know, anti-Asian crimes that's going on as of late, although they have been going on, it's just now coming more into light, as we all know. And I'm still trying to find my words, you know, I'm still trying to figure out like, I mean, I just love how you have that like snap back kind of attitude, Leah. It's like, you already have that fundamentally in you. And it's like, what do we do in those moments? Cause I've definitely, you know, have had those, I think you call them microaggressions, where where people like other you, right? Like so subtly, like it seems polite and endearing and they're trying to connect with you and stuff like that. Like if people find out I'm Filipino and they say Mabuhay, you know, and I'm just like, Filipino American though, bro. Like, I don't even speak it, you know? And it's interesting because having like a mother-in-law that's white and, you know, Scott's family is white, like what I've come to learn is that's sort of like in general, their way of trying to connect and trying to relate to you and trying to make you feel welcome. I think it's just that, you know, maybe because they don't have so much exposure to people like us that they're doing the best that they can. But because it's not as frequent, I guess, in their life to be around, you know, people like us, there's only so much times they can practice, you know? Right. And so, you know, it goes back to what you were saying, Leah, in that situation where you're doing this whole mental checklist, which I just want to say, I'm sorry you had to kind of go through that alone in your head. You know, you had to try to figure that. I mean, of course you had Andrew there, but still it's like you had to decide like, okay, is this worth bringing up right now? Like, I think that a lot of us do that. A lot of us have this mental checklist of like, is this worth it right now? Is it worth it to call out someone for that micro, like, should I tell them that that was a microaggression? Should I take them to school right now? You know, like, is it worth my time?
And unfortunately, because like you said, they only have so many opportunities in spaces like this in Virginia Beach or wherever you are, where it's a white dominant space. They only have so many opportunities to practice that learning and to, you know, be able to see what's wrong with that. And in those moments, it's like, is this racism or is this coming from just ignorance? And even if it is coming from ignorance, it came from some kind of racist root. You know what I mean? And so that is essentially the problem. It's just like, am I supposed to be responsible for your learning? Am I supposed to sit down right now and like, you know, like you were about to say, try and take you to school?
Yeah.
Like I still did emotional labor going through the checklist in my head, but now do I have to take on more emotional labor in making sure that my message is clear, but yet, you know, like again, like the tap dance of trying to educate people. It's like the tap dance of, oh, well, I don't want to be written off as an angry or crazy aggressive Asian American woman, you know what I mean? Or Filipino American woman, all of it, all the rigmarole.
It's a lot. I feel like we need to take a minute here to be like, wow. And we're facing it head on right now. You know, now instead of, I feel like we're in a time right now where we do have to speak up even as imperfectly as it is. Like I'm even thinking for myself, like, I'm still trying to find my words, but I have to find them, you know, I have to find them sooner than later, you know, but let's fast forward to today, Leah, because, you know, despite how your first initial experience was like moving out here, we have friends, we have some other Panay friends, and we have already done, at least together, we've already done a second photo shoot with some incredible women. And I just want to know, first and foremost, how did you meet Annie and all the ladies? Like, I'm curious to know, because I mean, they're all so incredible. I bet you they're going to listen to this later, but they're also, so I need to say nice things about them. I'm just kidding. Hey, no, friends. I would. I would anyway. I promise I would anyway. But no, I mean, they're all incredible in their own way. Like if our listeners, you know, look at our photo shoots and look up each individual, like they're astounding. They're all badass. Yeah. They're all just fire. Right. Wow. And so how did you meet them to begin with?
In a very Filipino way, one of my good friends from college, her name's Jamie Bailey. She's mestiza, like half. And we kept in touch. We kept in touch all these years through college. And she texts me one day. She's like, hey, do you live in Virginia Beach? And I'm like, I live right next to it in Norfolk, you know, it's, but it's super close. It's not even like, it's right here. You know?
Right, right. They're neighbors.
And she's like, oh my, she's like, oh, my cousin from Kauai is moving there. You know, I think you guys would get along well. And that was it. And I was like, okay, my friend, my good friend I trust from college recommended her cousin. And I went in with no expectations. I was more like, hi, welcome to the area. Like, sure. And Annie's an amazing photographer. And at the time, she was like, I'm new to the area. So I'm looking to take pictures of people. And at the time, my husband and I just got engaged. And so we're like, perfect. We can get engagement photos.
I love it.
And I mean, Jen knows, but Nani, if ever Annie takes your picture, she's just hilarious. She is so good at making people like relax and not take themselves so seriously. But then the photos, the photos she captures are like
pure.
If you hear her voice messages to us, like, like I'm going to play one right now. Do you guys want to hear this one? This is, this is toward me though. Okay. So Annie, I love you. I hope you're not embarrassed when I play this. You just have to hear Annie's voice for a second. Give me 1 second. Like this one was so funny. Okay. Wait, let me try to find it. Okay. Here we go. I'm going to play it so you guys can hear it here.
Jen, hi, Yuka. You're so amazing. You know that, huh? Damn it. I love you. Okay.
Oh my God, I love it. She's such an auntie.
No, and that's the thing. Like she, I mean, she pulls out the auntie voice super quick. Oh my gosh, I need to film it whenever she comes over sometimes. Cause my husband and I live in downtown and she does a lot of photo shoots here. So when she's in the area, she's just like, hey, I'm coming through. So we have a dog, right? Like
Blue.
But we both have dogs and Blue. So whenever Annie comes over, she says bye to me. She literally goes up to Blue with the auntie voice, like, oi, manapo, manapo, and like grabs his paw. So she's
I'm going to do that with my dog now.
She's very silly. She's very vibrant. And honestly, I feel like, she's the one who put this idea of gathering all these amazing Filipino American creatives and entrepreneurs here in Hampton Roads. And the point was to like, yes, like find community, make friends and all that good stuff, but also to sort of be like, hey, we out here, like straight up, we out here. This is what we're doing. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Yeah. I just feel really lucky that you invited me to be a part of that because, you know, although I have like, I actively, intentionally, you know, try to make friends locally, but nothing came as easy as hanging out with all of you, you know, and I think it's just that familiarity, right? It's just knowing that our common bond is of Filipino descent, even though like half of us are mestizos, right? Like half of us are, you know, a mix of sorts, which makes it even more exciting because the fact that we have that common ground of being Filipino and having those shared experiences of maybe being othered, but also just how our badassery of like being business owners and making things happen. And I bring this up often on the show, but you know, I do struggle with trying to feel grounded out here, you know, and yet, you know, sometimes my husband will ask me like, well, do you want to go back to San Diego? And I was like, well, it's not that. It's just, I mean, of course I miss San Diego. I appreciate the familiarity about it and knowing people there and still having connections there and my mom there, you know, and even I found out my sister is planning on moving back to San Diego. Mm-hmm. So I'll be the only Amos out here in the East Coast in the upcoming months. But I say all that because what I'm so grateful about with these incredible women is that I feel like I was able to set like a whole new foundation of women who want to uplift one another and to support each other. Like the entire time we've been a part of these group chats, have I not felt othered or I haven't felt any clickiness? You know what I mean? Like, it's just been like, I love you, girl. And then Annie's like amazing voice messages. I mean, I have a couple more I could play if we wanted to, but I should probably bring her on the show.
You get the gist, right?
You get the gist of it, you know? And, you know, I think
definitely need to have her on the show.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And so it's just, you know, overall, it's just like, it's just so nice that as I start to grow roots out here, it's nice that that's part of it. That's part of my foundation are just these incredible women. And I have you to thank for that, Leah. Like I really do. Like I haven't had anyone yet. I mean, actually Melody had reached out to me. So she's, you know, she's over there and I can never pronounce, is it Norfolk?
Okay, so Nani, girl.
This is why I live in Chicks Beach, by the way.
It's literally the correct, quote unquote, correct pronunciation of the city Melody and I live in is a Norfolk.
Norfolk. Okay.
It's a really hard Norfolk. But
how do you spell this?
Norfolk. But that's just how
I always get
I would say Norfolk.
Exactly. So
exactly.
Like they can tell you're not from here or you're a newbie if you say it
like that. Yeah. So, yeah.
But this is how I know I've assimilated here. I say Norfolk, and Norfolk is also appropriate. Norfolk, Norfolk, it's all
good. I like Norfolk. I'll say Norfolk. Yeah. I could say Norfolk. Norfolk. Because yeah. Norfolk sounds like, oh, fuck. You know, like that's what it sounds like.
That's exactly. What I was like, wait, what?
It's so harsh. It's so harsh, but it's just how it is. Yeah.
Yeah. Norfolk. Norfolk.
Yeah, that would take me a long time to get used to.
Yeah. I've lived here for 2 years. I still I always tell people like this is why I live in Chicks Beach. It's very easy. You know, Chicks Beach.
Easy to pronounce.
Yeah, exactly. But other than that, it's like, I mean, you know, Melody's shout out to Melody. She's incredible. I need to have her on the show soon enough. And obviously all the other women, but you know, it's just been so nice to like have that familiarity and just feel like, you know, I have friends here now. I have friends. And despite, you know, where your future takes you, Leah, it's like you were able to set that up for me, you know, and I'm really grateful for that. And I'm going to say that on the air because I mean it. So, I mean, I'm not just saying it because I'm on the air, but I would say that off air as well. No,
I got you. And I appreciate it. And I feel it. And I'm so thankful I met you as well. You know what I mean? Like, I know the listeners can't see this, but I keep touching my heart because it's like, yes, girl, like I feel this, you know, and love all around.
Yes, absolutely. Well, let's go ahead and move on from the love fest, although that probably won't end too soon. Let's talk about life today for you, Leah. So in addition to the friends that we have, give us a snapshot of your life. I know that you continue to be a teacher. You've been, you know, overall a teacher for like, what, 20 plus years now. And I know throughout the years, you kind of reinvent yourself as a teacher. So tell us like what this version of Leah as a teacher looks like today.
Yeah. So nowadays my teaching is twofold. I still teach young kids. I still teach primarily 4 to 6 year olds. And especially during the pandemic, it's been a lot of pre-K prep. So like teaching how to read, you know, your basic numeracy, literacy, all that like emotional regulation kind of stuff, but wrapped in a very kid-friendly palette.
Yeah.
but that's my base, right? I used to be a kindergarten teacher and K-1, K-1-2 and also grade 3 teacher. So early elementary school is where it's at for me. But teaching in that way through virtual private lessons. But what I've added is I do beginner Tagalog lessons for kids.
And love it.
Yeah, thank you. And it's been so well received. I literally teach students from around the world because it's virtual. Like we have international, like Filipinos abroad who take
these classes. Oh my gosh, classes. I want to sign up my son for this.
Not born yet, but
when he gets here, gets to that age.
And, I feel like, you know, Jen had put it very nicely that my teaching reinvents itself. Like I reinvent myself over the years. And for a long time, I was really struggling, searching, seeking, right? Like for clarity of purpose and all that. And at this stage in my life, I really feel like I've just surrendered and I've sort of gone with the flow. And the Tagalog lessons came about so naturally and organically, and they feel so right. I feel so aligned in them. And the kids do too. And the families are happy, you know? And my whole goal with having these Tagalog lessons is really just to give a space for kids to be with other Filipino Americans or Filipino whatever, right?
Yeah.
Because since there are international kids. So having a space where they can learn with people who are also like from similar backgrounds. And then just having the safe space to explore, right? Like explore our language, explore our culture, and just connect. So that's been really rewarding, super rewarding for me. That's one way. And yeah, so I teach in that capacity. And then I also teach movement. I did dance, you know, when I was a kid, like so many other children. And then in high school, I taught beginning dance to little kids, right? So that informed my teaching career when I went to college. And I was like, well, I guess I'll, you know, I don't think that dance is, again, that immigrant mentality. I didn't think dance was a practical choice to major in. Right. So I didn't, even though I loved it. And I majored in elementary education because I was like, I can be a teacher still this way. And my grandma was also a teacher. So it made sense, right? I was seeking like, this makes sense to do. But yes, I taught dance. And then in college, I choreographed for our Filipino Student Association's dance troupe, which we were award-winning, like not trying to toot my own horn because it was—
Hey, you should mention that. Yes. Oh, love.
University of Florida's Filipino Student Association. We have a long lineage of award-winning dance troupes. And I remember when the choreographers before me, so at least when I was there in school, they have to give it to you. It's like they don't, they're not going to hand it off to someone who, you know, they don't feel can keep up the lineage. So I was very honored. We came in first place. I remember my first year we choreographed. It was me and a very dear friend who actually passed. And I, every time I say his name, like, I feel like I'm going to cry because he was just that special.
Yeah.
Gone way too soon. Dr. Hui Win, he and I were the choreographers. I remember this. And our first year, every competition we did, we got in first place. So it was like, right. And then on top of that, at this time, UF was title town. Like we were winning the national basketball championships. We were winning football championships. So it was just like winning all around. But anyway, going back to movement, the movement has always very poetically moved through my life in different seasons. So as a kid, being a dance student, as a teenager, teaching dance to little kids and beginning adults, and then in college, teaching dance to my peers, but also playing flag football on a predominantly Filipino American football team. And we were always ranked, you know, we were always very respected on campus. Like if you said Honey Brown, people knew like, oh, that's a tough team. Like we got to be ready.
And a cute name. And then, I love that name.
Right. And thank you. I love it too.
Hence your sweatshirt.
You know what? Actually, this is serendipitous. I really just—
Not intentional.
Not intentional. Yeah. My sweatshirt says honey and oh my gosh, y'all, the universe. Yes. I could be that person, but also this is me. So yeah. And, you know, played sports. And then I also taught group fitness and teaching kids and group fitness has always been sort of my hustle, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. And yeah. And so now I'm a yoga instructor. I'm actually in the Yoga Journal Yoga Warrior competition and just seeing the support that's come out. Thank you, Jen.
You are so welcome.
I mean, it's special. It's very humbling. And I hope it's clear when I talk about it. Like I feel that my platform as a yoga teacher in this competition is not just for me. It's really to represent that yoga is for everybody, really, truly and fully. And also that I really believe that movement is medicine. Movement helped me through a very, very tough time in my life. And so I just want other people to feel like it's accessible to them as well.
Yeah. Wow. Powerful.
I just love all that you're doing. I love that you are so involved in like teaching kids, whether it's Tagalog or movement. I think that that's a really special and unique place to want to be as like a soon to be mom myself, and knowing that you work with young kids, I'm just like, want to pick your brain.
Networking about, opportunity.
Yeah. Like yeah. what you do with like hard to discipline kids or, you know, kids with behavioral issues. And of course my mind is just going all over the place with that. But I love your story and I love what you do. And I think that it's just so special that you've been able to nestle yourself in this space between your passion and like passing the torch on to the next generation, essentially.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm curious to know, because I hear, at least at the start of the pandemic, I've heard that like the people that I think, or what is it, the demographic that a lot of us were most worried about were the kids, like the young kids, and having to learn virtually. Because a lot of times when they're younger, they need to be more hands-on, they need to touch things, right? They need to do that. So I'm curious, like, has the pandemic like shifted the way you teach, or like, you know, whether it has, whether it hasn't, like, you know, how do you, I guess what I'm trying to ask is like, how do you feel like you are most impactful, you know, teaching virtually, that maybe will be great for other teachers to know and for other, you know, teachers to know? Because I could imagine, I mean, at least, oh, this is only what I've heard, so I could just be making assumptions, but it's difficult. I hear it's difficult to teach kids at a young age because they have to be hands-on. So tell us about that.
Yeah. So let's see, the way I teach now is, so in a traditional classroom, right, the teacher has a set curriculum given to them and it's their job to teach the kids this content. So for me, in my private business, in my small business rather, in these private lessons, I have the freedom of curriculum. Mm-hmm. And because I also have, I've been a classroom teacher for so long, like I understand what it is these kids need to have to be ready, quote unquote, ready by set standards for kindergarten. So as long as we're working towards these goals, right, of literacy, numeracy, writing, it's fine, but it's kind of like, this is the end goal, but how do we get there? We get to create it. And so
love it.
You know, thanks. And in my lessons, I take time. So we do like a pre-orientation where I get to just talk with the kid and the parents, like, let me get to see you. And we go from there. Like, I really truly focus the lessons based on what the kid wants to learn. And because my curriculum is very much so, it's a creation. It's honestly, it's a co-creation between It is a co-creation, but it's student-led. Like, I asked the kids, what do you want to learn about? And literally, one of my students was like, doors. And I had to stop. And I was like, doors? Like, doors? And she's like, doors. And then she's motioning, like, opening and closing doors. I'm like, why does she want to learn about doors? Like, what in the world? So, you know, because most kids at this age are like, dinosaurs, princesses, whatever.
Yeah.
I've done that. So my point in sharing this is how I have made virtual lessons work is I really give this space for the kids to learn because I empathize because I used to be a classroom teacher. There are a lot of restrictions and expectations. That's it. There's so many expectations placed on the classroom teacher that it can be stifling and it can feel like you're on that hamster wheel just having to do. And I'm very blessed that I'm able to have this space in my small business to teach.
Yeah.
Really for the joy of teaching.
Yeah.
So if I, you know, you ask for tips for other teachers, what I've done during this pandemic is I've stepped away from this need to like be so productive, quote unquote, and really just let kids sort of navigate what it is they want to learn. Like, I do have a lesson plan in the classroom. I feel like I would work and fight to get through it. Whereas in our private lesson, let's say a kid is really into, you know, the second activity we have. We're gonna nourish that. We're going to go into it because this is their time to learn, their time to be nourished, their time to be stimulated and grow. But also, especially because of the pandemic, I realized like this might be, especially in the very beginning of the pandemic, especially, this might be the only contact that this child has with someone outside of their house. And so I would try, you know what I mean? And I would try very hard to make this a special time for the kid because I saw that the parents I work with, they would text me and like, oh my gosh, you know, he leaves the lesson so happy. And thank you for, I feel like I'm going to cry, honestly, because I know I'm a teacher and I didn't realize until this moment just how special these lessons are, not just for me, but for my students, because I really put so much love into them. Like, I really try to see this as this pocket in the universe of this virtual lesson is a time for this child to grow, explore, have fun.
Wow.
And, yeah. and really love learning. And that's why I think I do really, truly think I was divinely sent to teach kindergarten, because, you know, I never would have imagined myself as a kindergarten teacher. And when I went to interview at a school, I was going for a third grade position. That's what I saw was the availability. That's what I wanted. And the principal was like, look, I really love you. And I know you're going for this third grade role, but I just hired someone yesterday. And the only spot I have available is kindergarten.
Yeah.
I want it. And I was like, what is kindergarten? like scenes from like kindergarten popcorn in my hand. Like, what is kindergarten even?
Yeah.
And now I realize, like, you know, this is such an important, every stage of a child's development is important, but kindergarten is like, that is where they're either going to love school or fear it.
Yeah.
And
oh my gosh.
So,
yeah.
You know, and so that's what I do in my lessons. I start every lesson with a joke of the day just so that the kids can like get some humor. But also what's really awesome with the joke of the day is it does teach risk taking, because I ask, are there any guesses on the joke? Right. Mm-hmm. And you'll see some kids who are like, they won't even guess. They'll just be like, I don't know. And then you'll see other kids who just, they really try, like you can see them trying and they say something. And it's awesome because it's like, I want to illustrate, even if you're not right, at least you tried, and not in a participation sense, but more so at least you were confident in yourself enough and felt comfortable enough to say something and like shoot your shot, even if you're going to miss.
To practice it.
Like yes. Take that risk. And that all comes from a joke as simple as like, how does the rainbow say hi? It says yellow, you know, like something like that. Cause we were, you get what I'm saying? Like
nice.
Corny kid-appropriate jokes.
That.
Thank you. But you get what I'm saying? It's like having these kid-appropriate, corny, cheesy jokes that go in theme with whatever we're learning. So that day we're doing like sight words with colors, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, so I do a joke of the day. I infuse humor. I do movement. I do music. I do, for the hands-on, I do create worksheets. And I have the parents print them out, but I also try not to have it be necessarily all the time paper-based. And so we'll do story time where I share my screen and I have an ebook thing so I can read a book to them. We do Play-Doh. I use puppets. I wish I had the puppets to show y'all. My quote unquote coworkers are a very popular sloth named Sebastian and a dinosaur named Declan. I have a really cool, it's like an Appalachian ukulele for lack of a better word. So we'll do that music. I think Jen, you saw this video I put on my Instagram. I have a wig and
I know
I've never had a wig. I know, naughty girl. I've never had a wig in my life. And with Annie, it was with Annie one random weekend. We went to the beauty shop because it was just there. Like we weren't planning on going. It was just there. And I was like, I'm going to get a wig. Today's the day, you know, and today's the day I get a wig. And I'm growing out a pixie cut. So it's like an awkward, you know, stage. But anyway, I see this wig. It's on sale, first of all. It's like $20, not even. And the name of the wig is Edith. And so my husband and I basically have alter ego koala names. Like we love koalas. Again, that's a whole nother story. I swear we're not that weird. There's a natural progression to why we're such.
You're interesting. Koalas. You're interesting. Yeah. Well, not anyway, weird.
So the fact that the wig's name was Edith, I'm like, this is a sign. And so I bought it. And one day I did this with two students I knew when it'd be like, what in the world? I had a substitute, quote unquote, substitute teacher or Tita Edith was the teacher. And
oh my gosh.
Well, I mean,
I'm just smiling really hard right now. Okay, go on. I'm sorry.
No.
Okay, go on.
We are multifaceted beings. And that's mm-hmm. I think I really put myself in this box of, oh, because I'm a kindergarten teacher. I'm like, you know, super sweet. And da, 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 da. Like I am, I'm very kind. I know that and I care, but I'm also like, y'all, you know, like I do snap back. I do clap back if mm-hmm. even with children. So
that's right.
You know, like Tita Edith was the sassy, substitute teacher that they still ask for. They're like, is Tita Edith here? Like, what is she
going out? So cute. You're
like, hold on 1 second. Let me go find her.
So no, I mean, thank you all for giving me the space to talk about teaching. Cause honestly, I realized like, I think I hold this in, but what you're hearing is literally almost a lifetime. Like I'm in my mid 30s. I've been teaching kids since I was 14 in some capacity,
man.
Like I've been teaching in some capacity since I was 14, not just here, like in dance classes in the States, in a traditional public school overseas in the Philippines. I taught would teach for the Philippines as one of the first cohort to teach in Metro Manila. I worked as a traveling private teacher for a celebrity. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like teaching has literally brought me all over the world. And now I loved how you used the word nestled, right, Nani? Like when you said that, I'm like, that's exactly what it is. I've nestled into my own where I don't see teaching as a necessarily like checklist of to-dos for kids. I see it more so as this is time to really like, I'm so cheesy, y'all, but I really see these lessons as time to shine, which is why Rise and Shine. It's like, let these kids find that light in them. Let these people, like with yoga, let them find the beauty and love and worth that they have in them as them, who they are in this moment today, not who they have to be. And let that shit shine.
Like, love it. Up. That's right. So, word.
Thank you all.
Yeah. No, I feel like I can feel your love. I can feel your passion and everything that you put into your lesson plans and the time that you spend with your students. And it makes me like want to be a kindergartner so I can be in one of your classes. Because it really does make a difference, you know, like even now I think back to my elementary school days or my kindergarten days, and from English to PE to dance to math to science, like I remember every single teacher and the experience that I had with them. And I remember the ones so vibrantly that I could feel put that love into teaching and not just going down the checklist of, oh, this is what you have to learn today, you know. It does make such a difference when your like heart is really in it. And the kids can feel that even if they don't know how to articulate that. So I think that it's, you know, just something so special that you have to offer. And I'm sure that you have kids that come back to you years and years after, like, oh my God, you are my favorite teacher. Or you will, you know, as they get old enough to articulate that.
No, I thank you all. And you know, I texted this to Jen last night. I was like, I was listening to your Unipro, not podcast, but you know, your Unipro
workshop.
Workshop. Thank you. Sorry.
Which you have done a workshop with them in the past as well.
Yeah, I was actually a speaker at the first Unipro for my work with Teach for the Philippines. Like I said,
love it.
Small world, but yeah, I remember hearing you all speak and I was just like, you all say the words so succinctly, because I know I'm a rambler. Like you all say it just so spot on and it hits. And so Nani, when you said, you know, this experience with your teachers, I recognize I do treat my lessons with the kids and also my like yoga classes. I treat them as experiences, you know, it's like, mm-hmm. I want the participant. I want the student. I want them to go away, not just feeling like, oh, I did a yoga class or, oh, I learned, you know, my sight word colors, whatever. I want them to go away with like, yeah, like that was something.
That was fun. Yeah.
It was fun. I felt connected, all that.
Yeah. There's two things that stood out to me in you sharing everything that you just shared, Leah. The first thing is, yeah, again, just kind of what Nani, piggyback off of what Nani said, the way, the passion, the heart that you put into, you know, teaching these kids. And also what I really like about what you do with the kids is that you meet them where they're at. You know, like you mentioned that you do have a plan and some and curriculum, but it's really student led. And I wonder if that is, you know, maybe the benefit of private versus public education, not to say this versus that, but I can imagine that is a benefit. You know, the fact that you can, you know, focus on one kid at a time, one, maybe two, but tailor it, you know, to them and how they want to learn. And so that's kind of my thoughts on that. And I really like that and appreciate that, because that's essentially what we do on this show at the TIFA Project, is we like to meet our guests where they're at. You know, we like to give them the space to share their story in a way that's comfortable for them and tell it their way through their words, you know. And I think we need more of that. You know, I think we need to create more space like that where people could come as they are. And I just think it's so amazing that you're able to do that for, you know, kids at such a young age. I mean, God knows, don't put me in a room with like, you know, pre-K kids. Like I can't stand it. Like I'm going to talk to them like an adult, like grow up, you know, and that's totally unrealistic because they're only like 4 or 5. But I just love that you have a knack for that and a passion for that, you know? And so that's one thing I wanted to add. And then the second thing is, you mentioned this a little earlier. I like how you say that you sort of just surrendered to being a teacher, because it also sounded like maybe you were trying to find like your identity as a teacher, like a specialty as a teacher, but you just allowed yourself to, you know, take that skill set into different things, like into different subjects in a way. And, you know, I think that maybe, I don't know if it's just because we're, you know, Filipina, that we feel like we have to figure things out at a certain point in our lives, you know, and we have to be a certain way and we have to be one dimensional. But I just love that you've arrived to a place where you just allow yourself to be multifaceted, because that definitely took me some time too, to be like, you know what, this is just who I am. Like, I'm on my third business venture right now. Like, I'm not going to like stop. Like, it's just who I am, you know? And so I just wanted to like share those my observations to you, you know, based on everything that you shared.
Thank you. Yeah, I mentioned it briefly before, but I definitely went through, yeah, I was in a horribly abusive relationship in like my late 20s. And, you know, I even went, I had to go through the court process of getting a restraining order, like, all that kind of stuff. But then recognizing how that still, that trauma definitely eviscerated any self-worth I held. It totally made me question everything, right? From my job to who I am to what I'm worthy of, right? And the fact that now, 7-8 years later, I'm truly happy all around. And I think before I would feel almost guilty saying that, but now I feel like I'm sharing where I'm at right now in this moment, you know, very happy in my marriage, very happy in my career I created for myself, happy with my health, like happy with my family, my friends, XYZ, and my finances. And I share that not to brag and be like, yes, bitch, I got it. It's more, you know,
but
what
you
mean?
Do.
Like, no. Well, blessings, but you do got it. Right? Thank you. But it's more so because like I remember being that really frustrated, sad, angry, like really feeling bitter at life. Like, why was I handed this card? Why was I the one to meet the guy who was like a narcissist? Like, why was it me? Like, none of my friends had to go through this. All of my friends are just cruising by in life, following like the projected XYZ. And it made me so angry that I felt like a loser. And I felt like a loser at times. And it felt like I was out of my control. You know what I mean? I felt like I didn't choose, like, I didn't know that he would be like this. And I didn't know he would do these things, da da da. But then over time and through like work, you know, again, movement helped me. Not that I would force myself to work out necessarily, but it was like, it just would kind of call to me. I'm like, okay, I guess I'll go to the gym. Okay, I guess I'll run. Okay, I guess I'll go to this dance class. Okay, I guess I'll do yoga. You know, all these things just, yeah, like surrender. I didn't realize until before the abusive relationship how much of a control freak I guess I was. And now, it's like, I think some people might think I'm like loosey goosey all up in the air, but I think what it is, you know what I mean? I think life really taught me straight up that outcast line, like you can plan a pretty picnic, but you can't predict the weather. And here I was planning all these picnics in my life, get hit by a hurricane, then what?
Yeah.
You know? And so, yeah, I guess if I had to, sorry, I'm still like humming on the significance of the word surrender. It's like, I think I was really trying to be so powerful and strong with all this planning and organization. And I mean, I'm still organized, but you know, like all this
controlling the outcomes.
Controlling the outcomes, when really that was just me not being as strong because I felt like I had to control it. And now in this state of surrender and the state of flow and the state of allowance,
you find things just come to you.
Things come to me and I feel much more at peace and just whole within myself. So.
Oh, wow. Nani, I heard you sigh really loud. So I thought, I'd check in with you.
Yes. You're preaching to the choir over here. I don't think that that's something that I've talked about a lot or maybe at all on this podcast, but I've had a very, very similar, just from, you know, the brief description that you shared just now, experience in my own life. And I know what you mean about like, no, this is not about me bragging. It's about me realizing like, oh, happiness is possible for me, you know, success is possible for me. And I do have some kind of control over that. Even if I don't know what to expect, and even if I can't control the outcome, you know, I can still control the journey, I guess, and how I guide myself through it. And, you know, abusive relationships will take away all of that agency for you if you had any to begin with. So I feel you.
Thank you. Yeah. And sometimes I don't want to bring it up because I don't want it to be like, oh, a major facet of my identity is this. But then I realized like I had to work through that. Like I said, it took 7-8 years for me to really like move through things. And I share this because I know out there, like when it happened to me, I was truly like in denial. I was like, how? Yeah. Like I had a mom and a dad. Like I'm educated. My parents love me. Like this isn't me. This kind of stuff doesn't happen to me. And then it's like, it happens to anyone, regardless, right?
Anyone can fall in love with a narcissist.
Right. You know? Right. And just saying, like, it was a very hard fought battle, but it brought, like, in a weird way, I found myself. I'm not saying I want this, not saying I'm hoping this happens to anyone, but that experience for me is what I needed to become the person I think I was meant to be.
Yes. It was a unique learning curve.
Right. There you go.
Y'all, that's, yeah.
That's a great way to describe it, Nani, a unique learning curve.
Yeah. No, I totally feel the same way. And I know exactly what you mean about, you know, being in the moment, being in denial, and then turning just to anger. Like, why is this happening to me? Why me? Looking around and all my friends are so healthy. They have healthy mm-hmm. relationships. They, you know, are just like, what is it about me that made me draw this card in life? And,
right.
you know, you have to work through that to realize, like, it's not you. It just shit happens. And
yeah. mm-hmm.
you have to learn how to navigate those situations. And when we're younger, we're naive to them. And that's, mm-hmm. you know, no one's fault. It just is what it is. And again, we got to just go through that learning curve.
Yeah. I like how you say that, Nani, because I think that in many situations like that, it's very easy to identify with them and say, like, I'm the failure. It was my fault. Like, I enabled this person to yes. be that way, you know? But when you really start to look at it from, like, an objective standpoint of, like, if you can kind of step back and just kind of look at the situation for what it is, it's like, no, it just so happens that all these ingredients came together and then this is what it turned out to be. And it's not necessarily my fault. It's just now that I know, you know, like it's I have to deal with,
yeah.
like, yeah, it's something mm-hmm. I have to deal with. And I do have some control to do something about it. You know, it's like, once you come to that realization, you know, you have a choice to take action or not. And so here you are, Aaliyah, like seven, eight years later, and you're my friend. You're so many other people's friends. Like, you're making a difference in so many people's lives, especially these young kids. And, you know, I think it's important to take this time to, you know, kind of give yourself a pat on the back for just how far you've made it. So, you know, kudos to you, Aaliyah.
Thank you both. I was telling one of my best friends from college, actually on Honey Brown, I was the quarterback. She was the center. So we have a very close relationship because literally everything I would throw. Anyway, you get it. Her name's Becca, and she is one of the owners of Tie Dye RX, an amazing clothing, like Panay owned clothing brand. So anyway, I bring it up because we were catching up a few weeks ago, and I was telling her how I'm like, you know, it's been a really long journey for me, but I think that God has been setting me up for quite the comeback story, you know, and I think this is now my chapter of, and it actually, we're recording this on the spring equinox, which is a symbolism of like the actual like start date of a new season and yoga. Yeah. And in yoga, this like any new season, it's this time of great, like clearly like fresh chapter, a new start, but also great release and great purge. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of beautiful.
I'm feeling that. Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah. Like this is the date we're filming this. And I remember telling her, like, I get it. Like, I can really like exhale and recognize like my past is gone and it's fine. Like, I'm at peace with it more so now than I ever have been. And now with this spring equinox and like stepping into new chapters, like God definitely set me up for an amazing comeback story. And I think that this is the beginning of it. Mm. So onward and upward, y'all.
Yeah, yes. I love it. Ooh, all right. Well, wow. What do I pick up from there? Okay, here we go. So, you know, I just feel like this is such a feel-good story, Aaliyah. Aww. And, you know, the story's not over. The journey is not over. The journey continues on. But until then, let's talk about, you know, one more life lesson that you want to share with us, because you basically dropped like a lot. But there's always more. I think there's always more to share. And a major life lesson you want to share, or that you've internalized yourself, is that there are seasons to our lives. Elaborate more on that and also share maybe an aspect of your life, your story that made you realize and internalize this life lesson.
Yeah. So how poetic, again, on the start of a new season, we talk about seasons of our lives. And, you know, growing up, I never struggled, to be very honest. I never struggled. My parents never shared their financial hardships with my sister and I. Like, we always had food. We had, you know, our necessities, we're a happy family, all that good stuff. And school came easy to me. I made friends very easily. I was never, despite like teasing and bullying, I had friends, you know what I mean? Like, I never, it was not hard for me to do that. But, and so that's why when the abusive relationship happened and the unraveling of my life as I knew it, it was so hard for me even though I lost my father passed away from cancer right after I turned 16. Wow. But even with that, I handled my father's death very well. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? And not even just for a 16-year-old, but kind of realizing like that's part of life, right? And so we talk about seasons in our life. I struggled for so long to recognize that, like, because my life was basically an upward trajectory, right? Yeah. It was just always moving, always progressing, always going, like always achieving, like check, 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 right? And then boom, shit happened. I had no skills on how to cope. I had no skills on how to rebuild because I was never asked to rebuild.
Yeah.
Even with dealing with like a major loss, like losing my dad, it was different. And now I feel that really embracing that, hey, you know, you can have a long ass period of waiting to bloom. Like, I feel like I was in this bud phase of my life for 7 years, you know, just sort of wanting to bloom, wanting to flourish, wanting to do all the things I knew I could and I have in the past.
Yeah.
And that wait was so frustrating. But I mean, I just feel that maybe the people out there who are listening, maybe if this is you, maybe if you feel like you're still waiting for your time to come, like it's going to come. And all this time that you are here in the quote unquote wait, it's not for naught, you know, like you're growing, you're shedding things you don't need of yourself anymore. You're learning and you're growing. So,
and that's the work, you know, I think that thank you for saying that. It makes me feel really appreciative and grateful for where I'm at today, because I can, you know, you can still get caught up in like, oh, this sucks, or, oh, this is happening, it's not ideal. But when I actually think about like how far I've come from that point mm-hmm. in my life, it's like, this is the work, this is life.
Right.
It's learning those coping mechanisms. And maybe back then when I was thinking, you know, having that mindset of why me, and looking around at all my friends like, oh, they're so healthy and they have healthy relationships and no one treats them like this. And maybe that was the difference. It's like they had the coping mechanisms to realize that, to not put up with that kind of stuff or to get themselves out of those situations. And I didn't, you know, mm-hmm. I had to learn them the hard way, but now I have them and that's something that I can keep forever, you know? So yeah, I just appreciate you saying that. And it is like truth to the choir, seasons, life is about seasons. And just because you're experiencing something that might be really hard or traumatic in this moment, just know it won't last forever. And, you know, all things come to an end, whether good or bad. And you just have to, again, do the work to have those coping mechanisms to get through it all.
Yes.
Yeah. That reminds me of a quote I heard somewhere that goes something like, you know, the last thing to grow on an apple tree is the apple. And, you know, a lot of things that you see grow out of the ground, they have to be rooted first. They have to grow in roots before they sprout. And there's value in that. Like just because you're in the dirt doesn't mean you're not growing. You're very much growing, right? Hence why we have a flower for our logo, BT Dubs.
Yes, our new logo.
Yeah, which we'll get into in episode 100. So a little teaser for everyone. Your story, Leah, reminds me of part of the trauma that even I am still working through since I moved out here, first in Richmond and then here in Virginia Beach. But, you know, when I think about my husband's life, and we're actually sort of talking about this a little today, that he was fortunate to have like both parents, and he went to, you know, he went to West Point, he went to Army school, you know, his school is paid for. He went to the military. I mean, there's all these things in his life where like he didn't really face a lot of major issues to the point that, or he didn't have to worry about, like, let's say, for example, for me, I had dealt with a lot of abusive relationships since I was 10, like, especially after I lost my dad. And so I was able to pick up on people really easily. I could tell if they're a narcissist or they're going to manipulate me or use me or what have you. So part of why we moved out to the East Coast is because my husband wanted to work with this business partner who turned out to be a con artist, and we lost a lot of money with him. But I knew within the first month of meeting this guy that I didn't trust him. And it took over a year before he ended up conning someone else, a dear friend of ours, dear friend slash like client, you know, to con that person for my husband to see, okay, this is not good. And I'm like, I told you this a year ago. thanks for trusting me. But anyway, I'm glad we're on the same page now. And the point I bring all that up is I don't fault him. I mean, of course I did, you know, different times, like definitely, but like I had my moments, right? So I will admit that. But what's that phrase? It's like a wolf hiding in sheep's skin. Like, yes. Like sometimes we can't identify, like we don't see it right away. If someone is a narcissist, if someone is going to con us, if someone's going to take advantage of us. And if we didn't experience that early on in life, you know, despite your upbringing, we don't know what it looks like. And so I can understand why you went through what you went through, because I mean, based on what you shared, based on your life story, like you pretty much had it good for most of it, that you weren't like, you didn't know how to plan for this. You didn't know. And then even the aftermath of it, you didn't know how to rebuild. And so, you know, I say all that because here you are 8 years later, killing it, you know, and my husband and I are in couples counseling, working on those things. Actually, no, we've actually moved past that. We're working on like different things now, but anyway, I hear you. And I think it's like, we all need to deal with that kind of a relationship at one point in our lives. I feel like that's like a rite of passage to deal with like at least one abusive relationship in our life. But I hope that
weaponized for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, on that note, wow. I mean, I'm just so grateful, Leah, again, like for you being a friend. I'm so glad that this podcast exists, that you found it via hashtag and reached out to me and introduced me to the incredible women that I know today locally in Virginia Beach. And I just want to wish you continued success and joy and love and happiness and fulfillment and, you know, just overall happiness. I already said happiness, but you get what I mean. I need to have like a thesaurus here of just like words that I use. So Leah, one more thing before we go, you have something really exciting to announce. So let our listeners know what's going on right now with you.
Thanks. Yeah. So I am in the running to be the Yoga Warrior. That's a contest run by Yoga Journal, which is an international yoga publication. And basically the prize is a 2-page spread in their publication, which again is global, but also $10,000. And I'm doing this, I know, right? Like I'm doing this competition though, not just for the prizes and not for the personal glory necessarily, but I really do care about making yoga more accessible to people. I really feel like I really truly believe like yoga is for everybody and everybody can do yoga. There's so many different aspects of yoga. And for me, movement and yoga has been truly transformational and a source of healing and empowerment. So I want everyone, regardless of whatever voice in your head says you're not enough for yoga, or you're not this for yoga, or you can't do that, or you're not, whatever it is, I want people to come to yoga. So please come, and any support is super appreciated. So yeah.
Cool.
Want to vote in the Yoga Warrior.
Yes. Love it. And we'll have that information in the show notes as well for our listeners if they want to learn more. Obviously they can find you on Instagram while your username is still your username, riseandshine757. Awesome. Okay. Before we get going, let us know. I just want to make sure I cover my bases. Is there anything else you want to share with our listeners?
One, this podcast is the bomb. So thank you. And two, that... I know I ramble. I know I talk a lot, but I'm not even going to apologize for that because we are allowed to take up space.
As much as you want.
Yeah. Because we already are taking up space. So just own it.
Word. Yeah, no. So I guess one thing I wanted to kind of clarify, because I feel we talked about the initial like awkwardness of Virginia for me, in my experience.
Yeah. At least.
I can honestly say I love life here. Now that Andrew, my husband and I are pretty much getting ready to move back west, like we're both really sad to leave the area, and we're moving back west to be closer to family. You know, my mom lives in Vegas and my sister's in LA and his parents are in Seattle. So we want to be, especially with the pandemic, it just showed like, dang, like we want to be closer to family.
Yeah.
And we just want to say this area is lovely. It is. It's not perfect. No area is perfect at all, but the people here, you know, like Jen's mentioned, our girl crew. I have a lot of art friends I met out here. And just, yeah, there's a really strong sense of community. And that's why Rise and Shine 757, I legit am a 757 fan. Big ups, VA. So just, yeah, that. And basically what I hope resounded from this conversation is each of us from like the youngest kid to, you know, the most grown adult, I feel sometimes we forget that we have that light in us. And I really hope that everyone takes time and maybe surrounds themselves with people who nurture that, but also can like learn to nurture themselves just like how I have and through my story. And Yeah, I really do hope people remember they have that light in them and they can truly rise and shine.
Aww. Yeah, now I fully understand the meaning of your username. And so everyone, before she changes her area code, make sure you add her on Instagram, riseandshine757. And Leah, let us know, is there any other way you want people to get a hold of you?
Instagram is the best. I am working on a website. So when that comes out, I will probably put that on my Instagram. Yeah. And if you do want to email, my email for now is Leah, L-E-A-H at riseandshine.com. All letters, no ampersand. So riseandshine757.com.
Okay, cool. So make sure you all contact her before she changes things because that's what she does. She surrenders to where life takes her, which yes. I think we all should be okay with and embrace. So awesome. Well, Nani, any closing thoughts from you before we wrap up?
Just that I'm so grateful to have met you today, Leah. And I already knew when you submitted your Google form response and I read it, I don't remember what in your answers was resonating with me, but so much of what you shared today resonated with me. And so I'm just really grateful to have met you and connected with you today and for all the gems that you dropped on us. So thank you again for stopping by and sharing all of that.
Likewise, this is really special what you all are doing. And like you said, Nani, you know, you're not necessarily getting paid for this. So big thank you for holding this space for our community. Like, this is really special work you all are doing.
All right. Well, beautiful. On that note, to our listeners, of course, if this conversation resonated with you, you can always text message us at 415-484-8329. Also, you can leave voice messages, by the way. I don't know if I mentioned that enough. I don't know if people are just afraid to leave a voice message, but you're able to do that. So if you're like me and you would prefer to talk rather than text, 415-484-8329, you can leave us a text or a voice message. And also you can email us Jen, J-E-N at tifaproject.com. That's T-F-A-W-project.com. And also Nani, N-A-N-I at tifaproject.com. And our website. Wow. So many things. So many ways you can get a hold of us. TFAWproject.com, TFAProject.com. Awesome. We love you all. Thank you all again so much for listening. And we'll chat with you in the next episode. Tune in next time.
We love you. Bye.
All right. Hey, Leah, it's Jen again. Thank you so much for sticking around. And without further ado, a couple of our friends here in Hampton Roads decided to leave you some voice messages as parting gifts before your departure and move back to the West Coast. Just so you know, Leah, basically all of them were really nervous to do their recordings. So just know that they put in a ton of love and heart into these messages. And they know that as imperfect as they are, you will appreciate the effort they put into these messages for you. So please enjoy. We love you and we wish you the best. And we want to wish you safe travels back to the West Coast.
I just wanted to let you know that I love you to death. And not only are you Rizal's godparent, but you're also my best friend. And I don't have best friends, but you have truly been a light in my life, Cello's life, Eric's life, all my children's lives, and Nomi's, and especially mine. And I don't know what I would do without you. Even though Vegas is stealing you away from me, I'm always going to think of you as family, and I appreciate everything that you do and everything that you do for the community, not only community, but for the Panay community and the women. So I love you so much. You deserve everything above and beyond and everything the universe has to offer for you. And I love you to death.
Hi, Leah. It's Nat. I just wanted to call in real quick and let you know how grateful I am that you are in my life and let you know how much I'm going to miss you when you go. I'm so glad that we got to know each other and that Annie's project brought us all together and that you're in my life and you continually inspire me. And I love the way that you lift up others and you're just so sweet and so caring. And all of us, we're so damn lucky to know you. And I can't wait to visit you in Vegas. I know we still have some months together, but I'm already planning a badass trip. So yeah, I just want to say thank you so, so, so much for the friendship. And I will see you soon. Bye.
Well, hello. this is Christine. I finally actually had a moment to sit down. And it's late. It's like 11:30 at night. So I actually get to sit down and bring my thoughts together and think about Leah. And I was like thinking to myself, what am I going to say? What am I going to say? Which don't sound too hood or too corny or whatnot. And what came to mind is just when I met her, when she wanted to learn more about what I did with Virginia Queen Yoga. Her sincerity, her love, her passion. I just sit down with her in our coffee shop at Equinox that one day. But prior to that, I was watching her and I thought how cool she was. How amazing she was. The things that she was doing in the community. And that was the biggest thing, was what people did in community that caught my eye. And then from there, you know, just getting to know her in the yoga community, but didn't really know her much. And then her reaching out again to do a photo shoot, and her presence, her friendship, her love, her happiness, just her in general, came into my life at the best time. And it introduced me to many other Filipinas. And she's just been a light. The more and more I get to know her, the more and more I see all the things that she's so passionate about, especially with yoga, teaching the kids. She has so much to offer. Like I said, she's such this big bubble of light. She got some hood in her too, which I really, really appreciate and love. And she'll tell you how it is, but always kept it so positive. And it's sad is because I feel like I want to learn more about her. I feel like, Leah, you have so much you hold. And I think one day I'll have that moment of sit down and just to talk to you and reflect on how we met and whatnot. And that might be years down the line. We're old and gray. Then again, I'm already gray. So I already passed that part. But you're going to so be missed, Leah. You're going to so be missed. Everything you do for all the girls in your community. Man, I look up to you. Even though I'm ate, I look up to you.
Hello, it's Kim. I wanted to leave a message about Leah and really just talk about why I love her so very much. So the first time I met Leah, I could tell that she was pretty shy, but in her eyes, I could see that she was a gentle spirit just waiting to connect with others. It was her sweetheart, once I got to know her, that captured mine. She is just a light, really just a gentle and kind person with her caring and soulful eyes. She just is amazing. She raises our vibrations together, and she's raising the next generation with heart through her teaching. She's so friendly and vibrant and caring of others. One thing that I have always noticed about Leah is how uplifting she is, you know, how rooted in that idea that, you know, we're only as good as how we treat other people. And she really embodies that. She's really always very uplifting and really just a true friend to everyone she meets. She's graced my life, and it's really sad to see her go, but I know that no matter the distance, that, you know, that friendship will remain, and it'll be really nice to be able to see her flourish in a new city and be closer to home, and it will be nice to have a place to visit. But I'm going to miss her so much. I feel like I was just starting to get to know her, and Leah, I'm going to miss you, and I know all the girls are going to miss you too, and it's such a joy to have you in my life. So thank you. And I love you. And I promise I'm going to come see you, and you have to come see us. And yeah, I love you.
Yeah.
It's Janice.
I just want to say how much I love you and I appreciate you and how much light you really bring to my life. Every first Saturday, especially, yoga with you is so special to me, and you're so wonderful to my life. And I really enjoy how brave and bold and how much light you really bring. And I'm going to miss you a ton. Ah, what am I going to do? Thank you for letting me style you and for, you know, being my friend.
Okay. I don't know how long this voicemail is going to be.
Okay. I love you. Bye.
Hi, Leah. This is Jewel. I just wanted to say that we are going to miss you, and congratulations. I know whatever you have planned for you and your husband, it's going to be successful.
We are definitely going to miss all your positivity and all the things that you do in our community here. And my only wish is I hope that I had met you, you know, a few years earlier. That way we could have gotten to know each other more. But I am so blessed that I was able to meet you, even if it was just, you know, a couple times. But thank you. You have definitely left an impact in my life, and I can't wait for you to teach my son Tagalog lessons. I wish you the best. Please stay healthy and please stay safe.
Hey, Leah, it's Joe. I am so very, very excited for your next step in your journey in Las Vegas. You best believe we're going to come out and come party with you, but I just want to take a moment to just thank you for being such an incredible human being. You're an inspiration to all of us and definitely an organizer of all of the crazy minds that are in our little Pinay family. And I could not be more excited for what's next for you. Thank you for guiding me through yoginess. And I'm so glad that we connected through yoga. And, you know, you really were a catalyst for making me want to go through yoga teacher training and really take the next step in my, you know, self-development in that realm. And I appreciate you so much for trusting me with all of your garments to mend and tailor. Even though they took a little longer than normal most days, I am so grateful that you trusted me with that and learning my new skills and giving that gift to you. I am just so grateful to know you as a human being. And I cannot wait to see what you do next. I'm so proud and honored to be in your presence and feel your light. And I have so many amazing things to say about you. I'm sure one message is not enough, but I can't wait to hang with you before you go. And I can't wait to send you all the amazing, beautiful blessings as you go to Las Vegas. And like I said, we're going to be partying with you soon, lady. I love you. And talk to you soon.
All right, Leah, there you have it. All of the audio messages from our wonderful friends here in Virginia Beach or Hampton Roads. I never still figuring out how to name everything. Norfolk. I'm pretty sure I pronounced that right, right? Norfolk. But again, obviously, everyone loves you and we wish you the best. And we hope that this ending has brightened your day. And take care, safe travels, and we'll see you again soon.